So welcome everyone to the Saturday afternoon happy hour. That's an old joke. Still laughing at that one. The Dhamma Loka Buddha Center in Olamara. This is our ongoing meditation course or class. So those of you who come for the introduction to meditation class, that class is being held in the room to my right. So the introduction to meditation class in the room to the right, because otherwise this class over here, we sit for longer periods, it's more deeper instructions, and sometimes people feel a bit lost if they come here for the first time instead of just getting the introductory class in the room next door. So, having done that little bit of housekeeping, sometimes in meditation, even in life, sometimes we have our difficulties, bad habits, overreacting to problems, and sometimes we do it just so quickly, almost automatically, that we have no control over these reactions. And these problems also occur in meditation, where you could get some fear coming up. You go to a state of meditation where maybe your hands feel like they're disappearing, or you may get to a state in your meditation where you are even just the conscious object is changing a little bit. And sometimes we react over much, and it spoils the meditation. And if we try and control things right where in the middle of the experience, sometimes that makes it worse. It's like to do something, it disturbs the meditation, not to do anything, just keeps the problem going on. And so we wonder, you know, what's the solution to this? And the solution which I have tried and it works is what I call programming your mindfulness. So let's have just a simple problem, like you have problems with sleepiness during meditation. And it's not the fact that you're tired, you've had a good rest, you relaxed today, but it's a problem about just being dull and just lethargic, and you're not quite sure what you should be doing, and so just go off into sort of dullness, into a sleep as a form of escape. So what we can do in our meditation is we identify just one problem, such as like dullness. And it could be other problems such as fear. It could be some other problem such as excitement when meditation actually starts to, things start to happen. Wow, great. And the way we deal with this is we choose our major obstacle, the one which keeps disturbing us again and again, one at a time. And then after sitting down, relaxing, usually once your body is pretty comfortable, then you make a resolution. Say it's sleepiness. If when I get peaceful, my mind starts to get sleepy, I will choose another path. When it starts to get sleepy, I will choose another path. When it starts to get sleepy, I'll choose another path. Whatever it is, in your own words, in your own description of the problem. Because I mentioned that because years and years and years and years and years ago, someone told me that when you go into meditation, the mind is getting very peaceful, very calm. And it's like there is a fork in the road of meditation. And one fork, just leads to the sleepiness. It's what you're used to. And so you just tend to always go that path, always go into sleepiness and drop into sort of this dull state. But at that fork in the road, there's another exit, if you want. And if you go that path, you still keep the peace and the stillness, but you have the energy and the awareness as well. And that path exists, that sort of turn off, but you keep missing it time and time again. So what you do is you tell yourself, it's like program, when I get to that point, then I will take the path of clarity, not the path of dullness. And that's all you need to do at the very beginning of the meditation. And then when you get to that stage, it's really weird, but it happens. You get to that stage and you're about to go off into your old habits of just dullness, And it's like the mind, the program starts to kick in. And you just go the other way into some clarity. You get people who say that when they get into reasonably quiet meditation, their heart starts palpitating, they get excited. And then it's, oh, calm down, sort of the heart, and just they're doing too much, and the whole thing just gets disturbed. The process gets interfered interfered with. So what you can say is, if that's your problem, you say to yourself when you start meditating, this problem occurs again and again and again. If I get to that state of peacefulness, I will just not pay attention to my heartbeat. I'll just pay attention to the peacefulness. I won't pay attention to the heartbeat. Pay attention to the peacefulness. Whatever instructions it is, clear, precise, as if you are giving instructions, you know, to somebody who is, you know, say your husband, to go to the shops and get the shopping for the weekend or whatever. Clear, precise, simple instructions. Otherwise, that they will just get all complicated and get the wrong stuff. So you keep it simple, keep it precise, keep it clear. And you do that at the very beginning, and you find that it's like an antivirus for the mind. It don't have to keep remembering it, it just kicks in at the right time. And for those of you who haven't done this very simple exercise at home, it's amazing just how much this works. First meditation retreat I did as still a student, I was really surprised that the teacher even told us to practice this, but you know, willing to try everything and anything, it works. And it was from that I realized that it's not just learning how to get up in the morning without an alarm clock, it's also learning just how this mind works. And that was when you were instructed to whatever time you want to get up tomorrow morning, say, you know, it's like 4 o'clock, like the monks do, or 6 o'clock, or 7 o'clock, or whatever it is you want to get up. Say it's Sunday tomorrow, so say it's 8 o'clock, for those of you who want to sleep in. So say you want to get up at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. Set your alarm clock for 8:05. You have to do this because otherwise people get afraid. It makes the fear of this not working and makes them tense. So set your alarm clock 8:05. And then as you in bed, tuck yourself in, get yourself nice and comfortable, just, you know, really, really snuggle up. And then when you feel relaxed, you make the resolution. Program your mindfulness. I will wake up at 8 a.m. I will wake up at 8 a.m. I will wake up at 8 a.m. And you say that to yourself, really clear, pay full attention. You don't just do it sort of, you know, quickly just to get it out of the way. Not really paying attention, but really full mindfulness. And then what happens? You forget it, go to sleep, have a nice rest. And then it happens, it's amazing how it happens, that you wake up in the morning, you know, what time is it? And look at 1 or 2 minutes either side of 8 o'clock. So accurate, I was amazed just how accurate that is. It works if you give it full attention and make it precise. So when I did that, just get up in the morning without needing to set an alarm clock, that I realized that that's what you can do, just simple auto-suggestion, just in meditation and also in other parts of life. People have problems, say, with smoking, cigarettes. You know, sometimes they told me it's like an addiction, it's a habit. They just, before they know it, the cigarette's in their mouth. So you tell them, just, I will be aware when I take the cigarette out of the packet. I'll be aware when I take the cigarette out of the packet. I'll be aware. And so actually the awareness actually comes up in plenty of time so they can take another route. It's not just this automatic habit they've been doing for such a long time that they're not really aware of it. So the programming of mindfulness is really useful in your daily life, but it's also very effective in the meditation for any problems which we have. And they're very, very important when you get into the deep meditations. You know, sometimes that I think I always like talking about the deep meditations as well. Things like when you see these beautiful lights in the mind. I think I talked a little bit about them a week or two ago. When you see these beautiful lights in the mind, people sometimes they get scared. Rah! And sometimes that it all breaks apart. So they see a beautiful light and they get scared, so I shall not be scared. It's too late by that time. Your mind is too subtle to interfere and give instructions. So if you see these lights or whatever and you get really scared, or the other one, obviously excitement, whichever one it happens to be, it's only one which really dominates. At the beginning of the meditation, you say, if I see that light, I will not be scared. When I see that light, I will not be scared. When I see that light, I will not be scared. You give the instructions prior to the event, at a time when you can, you know, just give some suggestions and it doesn't disturb the mind. You're not deep yet. And as you meditate, you go deeper and deeper, and you get very silent, and you're not sort of making commands or anything, and then breath, beautiful breath, delightful breath, starts to disappear, and just see the nimitta, the lights. And when they come up, it's amazing, just because you've given the instruction, you don't need to verbalize it, the instruction's there, and it just, you're not scared. Whatever the obstacle was, you go through it, you go past it. So this is actually the programming of mindfulness. And I also use this, I mentioned this to somebody, one of the monks recently, that when I was in Thailand as a monk, it was very poor monasteries in those days. And you were, you know, in the jungles where there were snakes, deadly snakes. And you had to go to the hall for the evening meeting or the morning meeting, back to your hut, you know, through the forest path. And there was really some big snakes there. And didn't have any sandals because, you know, the thongs would sort of break apart after a while. You just had to go barefoot. And even the flashlight batteries, they didn't last very long. So a lot of time, you know, you're going there just using the moonlight or the starlight to find your way through the jungle. And so because I knew there were snakes around and they were dangerous, when I left one place to walk through the forest to another place, you know, with no shoes, sandals, with no sort of flashlight, you made a resolution. Snakes are out there, they're dangerous. Be alert. Just that one thing, just looking out for snakes. So if I saw like a twig across the path, or it could be a shadow, I didn't know what it might be, I'd always either take another path or jump over it, so I never got bitten. I was on the lookout for them. And that's actually just the programming of mindfulness again. Just at the beginning of the meditation, you're on your lookout for your snake, the one which always tends to hinder you at this stage of your meditation. It could be the fear, it could be the habits, it could be the sort of the intense, weird stuff which happens on your body before the body vanishes. You're on the lookout for it. You prime yourself up at the very beginning of the meditation, you program your mindfulness, and then when it happens, you don't get caught. And again, that's also really important for when we do other sort of habitual habits. Little buttons, somebody says something or does something and it always tends to irritate us. And it becomes such a habit that our friends, our partners, they know our buttons. You just press that button, you get the response again and again and again. So in a safe place, relaxed, you actually program your mindfulness. When somebody says that, what does that? I will not react. When they say that, I will not react. I'll say that and not react. And that just gives another path. Instead of always reacting to sort of irritating speech or irritating actions, instead of always reacting, you put that program in your mind first of all. And when you get to that particular part, normally you just react. But then you see that coming, you stop yourself, you take another path. And it breaks the bad habits. The bad habits of speech, emotions, actions, but more importantly, the bad habits, call them bad habits, but the unskillful habits of meditation, so you can go deeper, faster. So, because I mentioned that today, just after we go through the body, before I go on to the peaceometer, I'm going to introduce that to program your mindfulness. So that's going to come in the first part of this meditation. Because I usually do the leading the meditation for about a quarter of an hour, 20 minutes, then I'm quiet, and then when I start speaking again, that's usually signifying the meditation is about to finish. So okay, so here we go. So if you'd like to get yourself in your meditation posture, closing your eyes. And starting with your legs, the bottom of your body. Raising awareness of your legs by asking the question, are you comfortable? Legs, how do you feel? Can I improve your comfort level? Really be meticulous, really careful, because you're going to have to keep your legs like this probably for the next 45 minutes. Make sure everything is fine, and then your legs will respond by relaxing and being peaceful. It also means that you establish this mindfulness, you get to know the specific feelings, the aches, the pains, the tightness. You may have tight knees or aches in the sort of the feet, stuff which may be an old sports injury or injury from an accident. So you get to know, and you get to also know how to put your own legs in the best position. You don't follow the books, you just follow the information which your own legs provide for you. And you respond to that information, you're kind, you're sensitive. You take experience as more important than theory. Until your legs are pretty comfortable. It doesn't mean you have to keep your legs like that for the next 45 minutes, but if you look after them at the beginning, they'll cause you much less problems later on. And then you look at your butt. Always do this because that takes a lot of pressure. And if, especially if you're a monk, you've got a robe and it's a fold of cloth is digging into your flesh. It may not feel much now, but it'll give you an ache later on. And also that you'll find that your legs don't tend to get the pins and needles if you get your buttocks in the right position. And then after that, you look at your back. As I said last night, I just love to have a good stretch at this point. Stretch the back, and it feels just really nice, all these endorphins going through the bloodstream. It feels good, relaxes. And I just feel my back, just check it out, make sure it's comfortable. Checking the belt of my lower robe. So my back feels it's about as good as I can get it. The hands. I just learned how to put the hands in the lap. It's good enough. Some people put their hands on their knees. It doesn't really matter where you put your hands as long as they're comfortable. Then I go up to my shoulders. That's really important because you do get aches and pains in the shoulders. Especially just when I wear the robe over one shoulder, that just shoulder with the robe on, just sometimes it cuts in, so I just relax that. And then just to relax the shoulders themselves, just to loosen the muscles. Every time you do this, it's easier. You get to be aware of the tightness, the tension in your own muscles, especially in the shoulders now. And trial and error, visualization, skillful means, you soon learn how just to relax. You find you just have to think, relax, let go. And then the muscles, they follow suit. Just as the same, I can just make this of the choice, I'm going to raise my hand, you raise it. Now I can do that to my muscles. Relax, and they relax. Awareness gives you feedback. Trial and error, experimenting, you soon learn how to relax your own muscles. Just whenever you want. And up to the neck, making the neck sort of nice and loose, balancing the head on top of the neck. A few little stretching exercise I did. Inside the neck, because I have an irritable throat, just can feel that itch. I know just how to be aware and how to relax it. If you need to cough, you can cough. Teach by example is most important. Then up to the face. Relaxing the muscles around the eyes and the mouth. And that does help take away any other sort of tension you might have inside the mind. Because you all know your emotions are played out on the muscles of the face, which is why people can read you or look at your face. I learn to be aware of those muscles and relax them. Then I become aware of my whole body sitting here. I've taken time, being careful, to relax parts of it. Now I look at the whole thing. Sitting here, pretty relaxed. Not needing to move. And if there is a part of your body still, which is aching, irritating, painful, probably because it's inside the body somewhere, then focus on that, zoom in on it, get to really know it. We understand disturbances, illness, irritations, inflammations, pain. We understand it by exploring it. Once we've explored it, we have mindfulness, awareness. Soon we find how to relax it, how to ease an ache in your tummy, the pain in the back, just feeling it, and learning this wonderful thing called letting it be. Opening the door of your heart to that feeling. Not fighting it, but making peace. Kindness. You find that irritation or pain can actually get less just because you perceive it in a different way. The mind's interaction on the body. Your own mind, your own body. can do this as long as you wish. I'm going to move on now. My body relaxed. Now, before I turn on to my emotional world, I'm going to make this resolution. Your snake, your biggest problem in meditation, what is it? Is it expectation? Is it fear? Is it just overreacting to any state of the meditation? Identify your biggest problem. And now make the resolution 3 times. That when that happens, this is what you will do. In your own words, 3 times now. Then we leave it alone and go to our peaceometer. It's already in your mind, you don't have to worry about it anymore. Now you go to your peaceometer. How peaceful are you, or how agitated? Awareness of that part of your mind which indicates how restless or how peaceful. Just like with relaxing your body. Now, you find what makes you peaceful, the cause of inner peace, and also the cause which makes you restless, disturbed. Soon you become very aware of this thing called peace, or rather the peaceometer. The more aware you are of it, the easier it is for you to decide to be peaceful. You know what works for you, what doesn't. Moving your mind to peace. It's almost automatic that you let go of the past and future. But you know, one reason why you let go of the past and the future is because when the meditation becomes interesting and a little bit of delight in it, the present moment is just too powerful. It overcomes your interest in the past or your concern about the future. And the present moment is enjoyable. You don't need to escape from it. So when you're learning about peace, your own peace, and it's working, that by itself suppresses the thoughts and concerns about past and future. And peace is something hard to describe. So just feeling the peace, it also lessens the intensity and the power of your thinking mind, which always tries to capture truth instead of experiencing it. See what makes you peaceful. See if you can delight in the peaceful, simple mind. you wish to watch your breathing, just be aware of the breath coming into your body, the breath going out. How you notice it is not important. If you need interesting way, breathing in peace, breathe out, let go. I'm now going to be quiet until close to the end of the meditation. getting close to the end of the meditation. How relaxed is your body? How peaceful is your mind? And why? As we explore the causes and effects, it's how we learn. We also explore the delight, the joy of a peaceful mind. And now ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation. Very good. So now you have the opportunity for the questions and answers. An opportunity for people to have any personalized questions on meditation. Here we go, from overseas maybe first of all. Here we go. From the USA, from Poland, and from not specified. From the USA, it doesn't say where. I don't think this is from the White House. How do I know if I want enlightenment? I don't know what it is. It is tied directly to, is it tied directly to meditation? Indeed, sometimes people spend a lot of their time wanting things, and when they get it, they're very disappointed. This was something which, I think it was Oscar Wilde said, the 2 tragedies in life. One is not getting what you want. The other one is getting what you want. It's not exactly what you expected. But this is, enlightenment is something different. It's transcending wanting, not wanting anything. It's closer to contentment, freedom, peace. So yes, it is connected to our meditation. Peace of mind, contentment, freedom. Just sitting, not wanting anything in the whole world. The end of craving. That's a very wonderful description of what enlightenment is. And the deeper you go in meditation, just the more that you come across the meaning, the feeling of that term. And it's for those of you who are scholars, who actually look at the suttas now, they're becoming more and more available for us. Okay, it's back in. It's disappeared. Yeah, it's up here. That in the deep meditations, they call them the jhana. And in the first jhana, when I was reading even what the sutta said about that, it was really quite astounding when he said that the happiness, the joy, the delight of that state, he compared it to the joy of enlightenment. And we all know it's not enlightenment, but it's that close that you can get a taste of what it must feel like. The Sambodhi Sukha, the happiness of freedom, stillness, joy, not wanting anything. So anyway, that's why that if you wish to understand what the enlightenment is, you just, you know, just get into deep meditation. But that's not really sometimes the point of even the meditation. Just you just go deeper and deeper. It's a natural process. The deeper you go, the more peaceful, happy, healthy, free that you feel. And it gives you a meaning of life when you feel just the power, the peace, the happiness of just sitting here, closing your eyes and just blissing out. And the power which it gives you afterwards. the clarity, the energy, the health. So even for those reasons, people meditate, and then after a while they get some insight, some understanding what this enlightenment business is. And so little by little it leads to that path. So that's actually, how do I know I want enlightenment? If you want it, you miss the point. So all the wanting finishes. Do you aspire for contentment, for peace, for happiness, physical health, mental health? Well, you keep going in that direction and it will lead to really, really deep insight, freedom, and the path to enlightenment will open up. So from Poland, all is clear to me while you lead the meditation, but I become lost when you are silent. Oh, I apologize for that. I'm not sure what to do. I feel like a small child in the dark. Okay, that sometimes I do longer guided meditations, but using a simile of when you learn how to drive a car, you have to have a driving instructor sitting next to you. And I remember those driving instructor cars, they have dual controls. So the driving instructor also has a brake in case you're going to slam into another car. So it's when you learn how to drive a car, you have an instructor sitting next to you. And it's very difficult, you know, for having a meditation teacher sitting right next to you every time you want to meditate, especially if you're in a place like Poland, a long way from Perth. But anyway, that these days you can have that by listening to these guided meditations. And of course, what we do here is done live. But there are many guided meditations which you can get online. You can download them for free. Just because they're free from the Buddhist Society of Western Australia doesn't mean they're no good. Still remember my predecessor, Ajahn Chakkaro, that he always called it the cheapest and the best. Sounds like an anomaly, but the cheapest can be the best. But, you know, these are priceless, and they are pretty good teachings. So you can download them, and you can use things like your iPads or your tablets or whatever, and you just listen to them while you're meditating. And you get those ones which you really feel are just for you. The length, the type of guidance which you have. And then after a while, just like when you're with a driving instructor, they say, you know, well, you can drive without me now. Which means that you learn, it's sort of training, it's a brainwashing, conditioning. And then after a while it becomes second nature. So when people drive a car, they don't remember the rules of how to drive a car. It becomes second nature to them because they've done it for such a long time. It becomes a skill. So you start with guided meditations, any place, anywhere. And, you know, honestly, I don't mind where you do your meditation. On the toilet, fine. In the chapel during the royal wedding, fine. See anybody with those headphones on? And, you know, they must have listened to this talk this afternoon. In bed. Because people think, oh, that's not respectful. It's more important that you calm your mind and become peaceful. The location is not important as long as you are peaceful. You know, I got this email about 3 or 4 years ago. Just somebody saying, thank you so much. You know, she works as a female sex worker in Melbourne. And she says, after part of her career, she tells her clients to listen to Ajahn Brahm's talks on meditation. Why are you laughing? And I thought that first, this is weird. But then I thought, well, why not? It's, you know, doing some good work for her clients. So it's amazing. Any place you can do this meditation, I don't mind. As long as, you know, you're doing the meditation and it's helping people, helping you. So anyway, that this is where you start, and then little by little you don't need the talks anymore. because you can just do it for yourself, like learning how to do any skill. You're with your teacher, practice at home. Doesn't work, so you go back to the teacher, just on the iPad, and little by little you get more and more skilled. Oh, oh, come on. It's the last question. I don't know why this is, don't know if this is relevant, but many people would like to know what you think of the royal wedding. Oh, crikey. I thought I said enough about that. Sometimes, even as a monk, you can't avoid it. So the answer is, in two words, not much. What do you think about it? Sometimes you might say that it's some good news. You know, people enjoy a bit of inspiration instead of like corruption. It is, I think I said to someone today, it's just like Walt Disney, but in real life. Just, you know, the prince and the beautiful princess or whatever, and they ride off into the sunset in their carriages, happy ever after. And of course you wish them all the luck. It's just people's fantasies and dreams which are just transferred onto that those couple. So, and it's just a wonderful little thing. Okay, my little royal story, just finishing off today. That, you know, because, you know, I'm well connected, being a monk for a long time, working hard here in Australia, there was an occasion, the previous Commonwealth Games, not the ones in Brisbane, there was one in Melbourne. And because it was a Commonwealth Games, at this time it was Queen Elizabeth came along. And so Tony Abbott was the Prime Minister. And so in the post, just one day I got this letter, you know, from the Prime Minister, nice little stamp on it, and with an invitation, you know, to come. No, it wasn't to come to the Commonwealth Games to represent Australia in the meditation. But it was to do a Commonwealth Day service in Sydney. What was it, St. Andrew's Cathedral in Sydney? Anglican. And then also to Kirribilli House, and also a state dinner afterwards. But anyway, in Kirribilli House, that's where Tony Abbott was. At that time, it said Ajahn Brahman partner. And so I didn't obviously have a partner, but I thought, who do I know in Sydney who can accompany me? And it was Ajahn Sujato. So, you know, we went there together. But I remember Ajahn Sujato saying, because it was only about 3 or 4 days before, you know, we could actually make all the arrangements. And he had this dentist appointment. And he said, rang up his dentist, can I change the appointment just to, I think this was on a Saturday or something. And can I change it to Friday? And he said, no, of course, I'm a busy man. It has to be something very important to change your dentist appointment. Well, said Ajahn Sujato, I've got an invitation to see Queen Elizabeth tomorrow. And the dentist said, okay, that counts. But anyway, there at the reception, that there was so many people there. There was obviously Queen Elizabeth, Prince Philip, and who else was there? I saw Prince Andrew. No, not Andrew, Prince Edward. Edward, I think. Anyway, because these were the big shots, you know, Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip, and then I saw this fellow just standing in the doing nothing. And, you know, I sort of asked Sujato, my partner. I said, let's go and talk to this guy. Because, you know, he's going bald, like many of those royal family are. Anyway, that's what it becomes when, you know, you've got the first person is heir to the throne, second and third have got no heir. So he was quite bald. So I went up to him. And just, you know, they have to be quite friendly. And just being cheeky, I said, oh, you know, sort of, we're Buddhist monks, I'm very good. And then sort of, you know, if you actually lose any more hair, I can invite you to become a Buddhist monk in my monastery, just like me. Ha, 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 ha. And then we went away. And then Ajahn Sujato said, who was that? And I said, Prince Edward. And he really scolded me. Ajahn Sujato, what? You can't say that to a prince. They're just human beings, after all. So anyway, so it was... The royal wedding, it's a wedding, that's all. But it just, you know, it carries the hopes and aspirations, and more like more the fantasies, you know, of other people. So it is just like a reality TV show, but you know, sort of a one which is hopefully sort of gets the best out of people. So it's very easy to put things down to be fault finder, but I always think, no, just it brings people happiness. When why not? So anyway, that's my my thoughts of the royal wedding. Not very much, because I don't know too much about it. But anyway, I did say, obviously, on Friday night, that I don't know why people ask me these questions. Why weren't you invited? And I know why, because whenever I do weddings here, you know, that I have to actually just to do the sprinkling of the holy water. And imagine if I sprinkled holy water on sort of on princes and princesses. I'll get arrested and put in the tower. So the blessings, if ever you've seen the blessings which I do here, you got married by me, you get so much water on you. And it's good. Whatever I do, you always give it everything you've got. You know, you don't do it half-heartedly, just give it full on. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, they get drenched. It'd be very good sort of TV. So Ajahn Brahm drenching a prince and princess. But I probably wouldn't survive it afterwards. Anyway, that's maybe one of the reasons. Anyway, that was just any questions here on meditation, something more serious? Nope. Excellent. So let's now pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and then we can go and do what we need to do. That's a nice filling in of time, 4:15. Ad libbing.